We do have a quorum. The Committee on Ways and Means will be called to order. We have the minutes of April 14th in your packet. Representative Hillstrom, I understand that you examined them very carefully. Would you like to so move?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom moves approval of the minutes of April 14th, 2008. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed? Okay. Members, you have in your packet a small adjustment to the budget resolution. It's amendment KN-RES02A5. The chair would move this budget resolution adjustment. I have visited with Representative Herberg about this. What this does is take $114,000 off the bottom line, which is in the category right now of other bills, and put it in the education bill. And it would be accounting for the Walker bill that comes through as new spending. Any discussion on the resolution? Any discussion on the resolution? If not, then the chair will renew the motion of the A5 resolution to the budget. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed?
No.
And carried. We're going to start off a little bit, as we go through this today, a little bit of flexibility in the agenda. But Representative Rukavina first, House File 3722.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The chair will move that House File 3722 be recommended to pass and placed on the general registry. And there is an amendment, A38. The chair would move that amendment. And all that says is that we don't spend money twice. These all have been appropriated before and are going through a second time, some of them, and this makes it clear that we're not double counting these. So any questions on the A38 amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed? Okay. Representative Rucarini, you want to very quickly explain your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As you indicated, Mr. Chair, this language and the dollars are in different parts of the budget bill, 1812, but I'm just worried that perhaps if something happens, I want us to be able to guarantee that these programs would be actually able to start. They were requested by Deed through the governor's office, and they both appropriate money to the Department of Employment and Economic Development, one for a displaced worker fund for soldiers coming home, and the other for a business that are hurt because of people being shipped over to Afghanistan or Iraq, and that's basically the bill.
Any questions? Any questions on it? Any questions? If not, then the chair would renew his motion at House File 3722, the first engrossment, as amended, be recommended to pass and placed on the general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed? And carried.
Thank you, members.
Members, we're going to go down to Representative Medora. Senate File 3669. This is a holdover from the previous Ways and Means Committee. There was a little confusion if we had the right engrossment on it, and it was delayed, and Representative Medora was also here before 8 o'clock, so we are rewarding her for that. The chair would move that Senate File number 3668, the first unofficial engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed on the general registry. And members, there is a fiscal note in your packet. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. What this bill does is it asks MnDOT and Deed to come up with a standard operating procedure, if you will, on how to work with small businesses when transportation projects are in their community. oftentimes what we have with small businesses is that they aren't really connected with city government, understanding how these projects, who the owner of the projects are, and this helps MnDOT to create a plan with these other agencies to create access to these businesses to get problems solved. If a water main is going to be shut off, what does that mean for their business? If a roadway, if there will be a temporary bypass on a roadway, issue, how to get that resolved? How to get permits for special parking areas for delivery trucks? That's what this bill does, is it helps to move MnDOT into creating the standard operating procedure plan.
And members, in your fiscal note, you see it's $8,000.
And has this been resolved? In a way? Oh, is that, do we have the old brief present? Okay. They do some expenditure in a way.
I wanted to check to make sure that the fiscal note was updated, and
yes,
there are some expenditures in fiscal year 08 as well, and that's correct.
That's correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Any questions? Not, then the chair will renew his motion that Senate file number 3669 in the first unofficial engrossment be recommended, passed, and placed under general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
It pays to show up early.
It certainly does. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Eakin, I know you have a commitment, so we're going to go down to your bill. Senate file 3061. Representative Eakin, you want to make a motion?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to move the Senate file, but I would also like to replace that with the House language, and I'm not sure the exact process.
We don't have the House language before us.
Okay.
Let's see if we can get that.
Okay.
Do you want to just hold off, and I guess we were unaware of that while they're getting it duplicated. Representative Eakin, I know you have a commitment in other places, but maybe we can go on to another bill then while that's being taken care of.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay.
Where's the walker here?
Representative Junkie. House file 3902. The chair would move House file 3902. And there's an amendment for that one, is that right?
That's correct.
The chair would move House file 3902, be recommended passed and placed in the general registry. And then there's a amendment A47. Members, do you have that amendment being passed out now? The chair would move the A47 amendment. And Representative Junkie, this has some fiscal implications. Would you explain?
Mr. Chair, the A47 amendment to the bill, this is the Minnesota Agriculture, State Agriculture Society, vis-a-vis the State Fair, and they charge fees and run a campground there. There's an event this summer with some really long RVs, and since they didn't fit exactly in the mold of their campground, they were going to be charged one fee. This basically is an agreement between the campers and the Ag Society to charge 50% of that fee. And the Ag Society is here. They've agreed on it. They're in the audience. And this just codifies that agreement for this summer for the RV show out there.
Okay, any questions on the amendment? Any questions on the amendment? If not, then all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? And carried. Representative Junkie.
And Mr. Chair and members, what the bill before you is, again, originally we had a large omnibus bill for Ag, Veterans Affairs, Board of Animal Health, etc., all our accounts. We then, based on information and instructions given by you, Mr. Chair, and the Chair of the Finance Committee, separated into two bills, a fiscal and a more of a policy bill, and this is the policy side of it. But I will admit, scattered throughout here are remnants of the fiscal bill, which is obviously why it's moving this route too. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 provisions in there that move money from one year to another in the same biennium, that direct money to be used from special accounts, etc. But nothing in here fiscally affects the budget resolution that you have made and we have made before. So I can go through those individually if you want, but they're minor fiscal things, but they are in here.
And there's no change or no additional things. It's all within the bills that have been passed before.
That's correct.
Any questions? The Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm looking at a fiscal note full of a whole bunch of zeros, and it doesn't appear that this fiscal note is to the bill in front of us. So are you saying you don't have a fiscal note for the bill in front of us? Or?
Representative Holbrook, I was looking at the same one and was wondering.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, I have lots of fiscal notes and a lot of them, but they came through with the finance parts that came in a separate bill. And
that's the wrong note for that, for the next fiscal note, for the next bill, the zeros.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, I do have another amendment, an oral amendment, when you have an opportunity.
Okay. That is the note for 3343 if you look on top. It's in the wrong packet.
And Mr. Chair, is it true there is no fiscal note for this bill? Or?
There's no completed fiscal note. It is everything in here has been passed before. It's in the large bill, my understanding. I don't have a completed fiscal note specifically on this. But maybe Representative Junkie, if you can just point out your the appropriations that you're making in this bill. You said there were five.
Mr. Chair, maybe we can speed this up a little bit. Is there general fund impact to this bill?
Representative Junkie, any general fund impact?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, no.
And okay. So just for the record, then, the only impact is fee. Are there any fee increases in this bill, the special revenue account?
Representative Junkie.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holbrook, there are no fee increases. There's redirection of fees and instructions on how to use fees in special revenue accounts. And the only general fund implications are moving from the first year biennium to second year biennium to allow monies to be spent, but doesn't change the overall levels that were set last year.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am satisfied.
Any other questions? Representative Chumper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Junkie, I had a couple questions. I thought the LIFE grant program was $2.3 million, correct? Isn't that general fund?
Can you give us a page number?
Mr. Chair, I can answer that. First page, Livestock Investment Grant Program. Again, to remind the committee what we did, this was a large omnibus Ag and Veterans Affairs bill. Then we separated the fiscal part of it, and it went off in 1812. The language, some of the language that supported some of that still remains here, and the livestock investment count is one of it. So the language is here, but then it'll be funded in 1812. So they're coming in two separate pieces, and we'll meet hopefully at the end of the day.
Representative Chunker.
Well, but now that we see what the policy is doing, I just had a couple of questions about that. Now that we see how the money is connected to the policy, Representative Junkie, I guess I'm at a loss about why we need this $2.3 million in grant money, and perhaps you can explain it. Is there a shortage of credit in the agricultural community that we have to make grants for this whole list that you have under definitions? For example, some of the livestock enterprises that will be available to receive this grant money were, for example, mules and llamas. Do we really need to subsidize livestock raising facilities for mules and llamas in Minnesota?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shumper, this is the Livestock Investment Grant Program, formerly the Livestock Investment Credit that was going through taxes. It's now become a grant program in the Department of Agriculture, and we fund it there with grants, but it works much like a tax credit. We have an example of when this was used, and it was actually in your area, because we implemented this program for the first time for the flood relief, and a number of your farmers accessed this program. And it doesn't matter if you have a horse sheep, goats, cattle, swine. Everyone has feed. We want people to be able to upgrade and maintain their feedlots. Pastures are included in here too. So if you're pasturing hogs or you're pasturing cattle, pasture development is included in here. It's basically to put an infusion like our friends across your border in Wisconsin do to their livestock people in order to enhance that industry and grow it. So we actually used it for the first time, but we sunset it February 1st after the flood relief. It was part of the flood relief package, and we actually sent money out to a couple of your growers.
Representative Kemper.
But just to clarify, Representative Dunkey, that was for people who suffered actual losses due to the flooding and to the disaster, as I understand it. Now, if I'm wrong, correct me, but, you know, people had to prove they had losses due to the flooding, and then they were given grants to repair that damage, correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kemper, not necessarily. We put it in place because we said if they had losses and were repairing them to that level where they were before, that's one thing. But we said as long as you're repairing, perhaps you want to enhance even more. So this was in place for floods to go beyond the flood damage. And I assume that's what your folks did, because we said if you're bringing the caterpillars out to redo your feedlot and you want to expand it or enhance it or put in more concrete or come up to MPCA rules or you're expanding your animals, why not do it now? And we want to make sure they did. So this was put in place as an enhancement to go beyond the flood damage and improve their feedlots even more.
Just a point of clarification, this is the money that was appropriated last year, is that correct, Representative Junkie?
Mr. Chair and Representative Trumper, or Mr. Chair, no. It's money that's in 1812 this year.
And this is a policy that goes with that particular...
And Mr. Chair, yes, the Senate did it different. They carry this whole bill in 1812. We carry it here. It's one of the requests that 1812 just sent out a memo last night to chairs, and they would like to bring this language over in to support the money. So it's one of those issues they'll talk about next week. All this language may come back in 1812, but that's under discussion.
Representative Jumper.
Representative Junkie, I don't recall any of the producers getting grant money to go beyond their damage due to the flood. So I'll look into that. And I do want to point out, members, that there was a $5,000 limit on that, correct? I was told that repeatedly there was a $5,000 limit. So, I just think, knowing from my own banker, it doesn't seem to be a credit shortage in rural Minnesota, and so I guess I'm just kind of wondering why we're giving out $2.3 million for things that people could easily borrow money for. So,
and Mr. Chair, one more time, Representative Trumper, this isn't about credit. This is about a grant to stimulate growth of our livestock industry across Minnesota. It has nothing to do with credit. This is a grant, cash money to them as an incentive to increase their operations, to enhance their operations, to change their operations, perhaps from a standard dairy unit to a pasture fed unit, and get into the organic market. Whatever the reason, this is an enhancement to do that and make Minnesota's livestock industry stronger.
Representative Jumper.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, I did have another question on the changes you're making for the pesticide collection and disposal. And I correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like you're increasing or you're expanding the pesticide collection to include agricultural pesticides. And I'm just wondering, it strikes me that that may be a large volume of product. And I guess I'm wondering, it appears that you're funding it with general fund money, and or is it being funded out of the pesticide, pesticide regulation fund or registration fund, I believe it's called? And if not, why couldn't it be funded out of the pesticide registration fund?
Representative Junkie.
Mr. Chair, Representative Shumper. The waste pesticide collection program referenced in here was a Representative Saylor bill, and it was a result of the waste pesticide collection task force that met over the summer. The counties, particularly, but a number of members, including myself, we cut back the waste pesticide collection program when the budget shortfalls hit about 5 years ago, 4 years ago. And since then, our counties have only been receiving waste pesticide collection sporadically. Prior to that, we did annual or biannual collections of waste pesticides, ag pesticides, and non-ag pesticides in our counties. This bill basically puts us back on that schedule so that every county will get an annual collection of waste pesticides, regardless of whether it's agriculture or non-agriculture. And in fact, agriculture wastes are going down and non-agriculture are going up in most of our counties. As to the money, this does come from the Ag Fund, which is funded in part by the fees paid for registration of pesticides in this state. It is not general fund money.
Okay. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to point out that everything in agriculture is not rosy. Everybody doesn't have a lot of money to do that. I reference the bovine tuberculosis that's going around. I'm certainly, you know about that, being in the cattle business. And it's my understanding that everybody that raises pigs are losing at least $30 a pig, if not more. So there are certainly some great needs that if I was a banker, I probably wouldn't want to fill all the gaps.
Other discussion? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Junkie, I do want to comment. I don't care if it's cows, trees, bushes, llamas, mules, whatever. We need to diversify the agriculture in Minnesota, and I hope you don't discriminate against something because it's not a black and white dairy cow anymore, that we include everybody. My question centers around the TV.
How about red dairy cows?
Red dairy cows are good. Brown Swiss are good, okay. Mr. Chair. Anything. I believe in alternative agriculture. It's great. Representative Junkie, I really want to ask a question around the TB. Are we doing everything so that we don't have happen here in Minnesota the best we can what happened in Michigan?
Mr. Chair, you see remnants of the Board of Animal Health language in here being carried forward, as well as in 1812, as well as in the Olin bill that you'll see today on the floor. And we hope so, Representative McNamara. We don't want to become a Michigan where it became a statewide problem. It's been intense, particularly with the deer populations up there, the fencing requirements, and trying to get herd buyouts. But between the governor's office and both bodies, both sides of the aisle in the legislature, we've had numerous meetings, and we think we are addressing it. We basically are providing them every resource they've asked for herd buyouts, for herd eradication in the deer, for fencing, for testing, and everything else. So we think we are, but again, it's one of those diseases where we hope it doesn't move any farther than it does, because it could affect the entire state. We're trying to cordon off right now for members an area that will be TB zone, and outside that zone, then producers in southern part of the state, for example, will not have to test their cows. If we do not get that status, TB free area and TB area in the state, that would mean every one that owns a cow, dairy, beef cattle across the state would have to do a test. That's a veterinarian on the farm, a $10 to $15 per head test, and we're trying to avoid that right now because it is up in Roseau County mainly and in that northern part of the state. But it's a very serious issue, and you'll see the bill today on the floor asking for the money, and we're fast forwarding that beyond 1812 to get going as fast as we can on herd buyout.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Junkie, thank you for your leadership, because you are right. This is serious, and I'm glad that we're taking it in serious and moving it in a number of ways, and thank you for your leadership on this issue.
Other questions?
Mr. Chair, I do have one short, I have one, a one-word amendment, if you would.
Can you point it out to us, please?
Yes, page 46, line 28, right after country, put or, O-R.
There's
just a drafting error because it's 90 days active duty in a foreign country or has been awarded or armed or Kosovo or
allowed.
I know it's a major policy shift and you don't usually allow that, but or, it's or.
Okay, the chair will move that amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Other questions? If not, then the chair will renew his motion that House File 3902, as amended, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Representative Junkie, the next one, 3343.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, very quickly, this is
let's bring it before us.
Okay.
The chair will move House File 3343 be recommended pass and place in the general registry. Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is a wind aggregation bill. Very simply put, last summer, I believe it was University of Minnesota Morris, went out on a bid for a windmill, to add a second windmill to their experiment station out there. They had about five people take the RFPs and looked at them, and when it came the day to open bids, there were no bids submitted. So they called some of the people, windmill producers, and asked them why they did not bid. They indicated because of the popularity and the demand for windmills, they were taking orders of no fewer than 10. And so we quickly realized that whether it's a municipal utility, a school district, a college, a number of entities in the state that want to put up one or two windmills, it was becoming more and more difficult. So the Commerce Department will become an aggregator. They will go out and collect names of people who want windmills, and they will then place an order of 20 or 50 or 100 at a time, hopefully lowering the price, better negotiation for a price, and being able to put that in. They are not paying for them, obviously, so there's no general fund, and there is some special fund money if they need it to run the program that is in the last section of the bill. Comes from Public Utilities Commission under Administrative Costs of the Reliability Administrator. That's that section, up to $100,000, but it's not general fund.
Questions on the bill? Questions on the bill?
And members, this bill will also, I think, be carried in Representative Hilty's Energy Omnibus Bill if that comes to the floor. But
Representative, any other questions? If not, then the chair will renew the motion that House File 3343 be recommended to pass based on the general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? And carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Eakin. And we have the Representative Eakin, want to make a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd like to move that Senate File 3061 be recommended to pass and place on general register.
Second in growth.
Second in growth, that's correct. And I do also, as I said earlier, would want to substitute the House language, which is House File 3366, second in growth, for the Senate language.
Okay, Representative Eakin moves House Senate File number 3061, the second in growth, be recommended pass based on the general registry. And Representative Eakin moves amendments to that particular Senate file, and the amendment is the language that's contained in House File 3366. That's what we bring it in the form of the author wants. Any discussion? Not all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And the bill before you provides access to the Petro Fund to replace PVC piping that's been put in homes, which has been causing some problems because fuel oil has been known to dissolve the adhesive that's used in the PVC piping and has resulted in spills that have been very expensive to clean up for the Petro Fund. This is a way to take care of the problem before it happens, to prevent the problem. It does have a limit on how much money from the Petro Fund can be used for this purpose. It's $250 per home where these PVC pipes are found, and again, the homeowners can come in and access this money. I believe it's about $450 or so that it costs for the actual replacement of the PVC piping. So it wouldn't cover the full cost, but it would be an incentive for them to come in and make this replacement and hopefully avoid expensive spills in the future. There's also a total cap of $1,500,000 that can be coming out of the Petro Fund. And this was put in to satisfy the concerns of the PCA about how much money is going to be spent on this. They are now supporting this. And the reason that we replaced it with the House replaced Senate language with the House language is two reasons. The Senate language would have allowed it to be used for both fill and vent piping, and the vent piping really isn't the problem because you're not running the fuel oil through that. The other difference is we did put in some language that Representative Osment had approached us about, putting in some language to really express that this is a unique situation because it's not being used to clean up spills but to prevent them, but that this isn't something that is going to open up the federal fund to other purposes beyond dealing with these spills.
Discussion, Representative Gunther.
Thank you. Representative Eakin, can you explain where the money for the petrol fund comes from and what it's for?
Well, again, the money is for cleaning up spills and cleaning up areas that have been contaminated. As far as where the money comes from, Mr. Feldman could probably, or...
There's a question. Did you have a question that you wanted to have answered?
I was just curious if that was the fund. I think it is.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. If you can identify yourself for the tape, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joel Fisher. I'm the director of the Petrol Fund Program.
Okay. Did you hear the question? Okay.
Yes.
You want to ask it? Welcome, Mr. Fisher.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, the fee is a 2 cent per gallon fee that is paid on bulk, but the bulk distributors pay it on petroleum products. So it could be gasoline, diesel, ethanol, fuel oil in this case.
And Mr. Fisher, that's a blink-on, blink-off, depending upon the need. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes. It's, when our fund balance drops to $4 million, I then notify the five-member Petrol Fund board, and then they decide when the fee will turn on. And it's on for a minimum of 4 months. And over the past decade, it's only been on 4 months out of the year.
Okay. Members, you have the fiscal note in front of you as well that... shows that it's ONUT 9 at $519,000 from that particular fund. Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Any other questions? Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to ask the author, what is the probable cost, the $250 per residential location? You indicated that would not pay for it all. So this could be a major housing issue for some people. I'm just wondering what that actual or average cost you project to be.
And, Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I think it's about probably $450 or so per household where this would happen. And again, it's not meant to cover the whole cost, but be an incentive for homeowners. Homeowners aren't required to do this, but obviously this would be advertised, and hopefully a number of homeowners would take advantage of this.
Uh-huh. Representative Clark.
And I guess one thing it also does is it allows the manufacturers of the PVC product to have no liability, apparently, or to have no cost, right?
Representative Eakin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, that is correct. But it's the homeowners that, in the cases of these situations, it's the homeowners who put the PVC piping in. Others are not allowed to do it, but homeowners have oftentimes done it on their own, and so again, it's designed to get it at those folks who put it in on their own.
Okay. Other questions? If not, then Representative Eakin renews his motion that House File 3366, as amended, be recommended to pass, and Eakin moves the motion that Senate File Numbers 3061, as amended, be recommended to pass and placed on the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The next one on the list is House File 615. Representative Walker. If she comes down, the chair will move that House File 615 be recommended to pass based on the General Register. Representative Walker, welcome to the committee, and members, there is a fiscal note in your packet on this bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members.
Try to explain the bill, particularly the fiscal implications.
Yes, Mr. Chair. This is a bill that members would have seen last year that made it through the omnibus K-12 education bill, however, was taken out at the last minute. The bill itself, while focuses many folks focus on the sex education part actually deals with much broad opportunities for young people around education in the K-7 to 12 grades, healthy development, conflict resolution, abilities and assistance to be able to talk to parents, dealing with medically accurate sex education. The fiscal note, Mr. Chair, is really the department saying that they will need one staff person to be able to offer skills and assistance to school districts that might need assistance in developing the curriculum. It's a local control opportunity with a baseline set that is currently, that would move what our current standards are for school districts. Right now, school districts have to teach some STI and HIV curriculum to students, so that baseline would be moved up with an abstinence-based approach first with some other additions. The other important piece to remind members of, if there are parents that are not interested in their children participating in this curriculum, there is an opt-out provision in there that would require that. And I think that's it, Mr. Chair.
Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Walker, I'm looking at this information, and I'm always concerned about notification and parents knowing what their rights are in respect to their students. And it looks like...
Representative Holbrook, can you tell us which page you're on?
I'm getting there.
Okay.
It looks like on page 2 you have a whole subdivision on notice and parental options. And when you get down to where the standard is determined, that being on line 32, paragraph E, it's permissive in nature, in that a school district may develop a policy for parents to review. And I'm concerned that I don't see anywhere in this bill where students are, or where parents are guaranteed the right to review. And I don't see anywhere where the school districts are compelled to get permission for their kids to participate.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, I'm looking for it. Actually, I believe it was Representative Brown that put that another sentence in there last year, and I just need to find it if you just give me a moment. Oh, Mr. Chair, on line 2.9, I need the clarification, Representative Holbrook, because at first you started to talk about the more of the parental choice of having their child not participate, but you ended up really talking about the curriculum itself. And so which one are you?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't think you can separate the two. I think that you have to, in order for a parent to make the decision whether or not they want their kids to participate, they have to be guaranteed the opportunity to review the materials. And it looks, you know, you get under in lines 211 through 231, you give all kinds of rights. And on line 27, you say a school district must establish policies and procedures for reasonably reviewing. And then it all refers back to consistent with if you look at line 30 at the end, it says consistent with paragraph E and this section. And so you have must and may's all mixed up, and paragraph E actually has the may that everything refers back to. And so
Representative Walker.
It starts actually on 2.9, although it's under a different section, a subdivision. Saying that school districts must consult with parents, and that would be with individuals that are interested in developing the curriculum. The section that you're talking about, parents would have had the notice that they would have had the option to help develop the curriculum out in the local school district. Mm-hmm. From there, it's up to the parent to decide once we're getting the information if they do want their child participating or not.
And Mr. Chair, school districts don't develop curriculum each year. You might have a curriculum that's been sitting there for 5 or 6 years, and the opportunity to participate in the planning and implementation of the curriculum is long past. I mean, I don't want to spend a lot of time, this is Ways and Means, and this is definitely policy, but I think that before this gets to the floor, it would be nice if there was more consistency in the language and what the musts are and what the mays are, and for my purposes, I think it's important that parents are guaranteed a right to review the curriculum, that there's some formal process for opting in or opting out, and that it's the parents' right to do that, and that they have an opportunity to find out that it's their right before the curriculum is actually presented to the students.
Representative Walker?
Mr. Chair, two things. One, Representative Hobart, there actually was an amendment that was put on in the Finance Committee. School districts have to review their curriculum every 3 years, and actually there was an amendment that was put on saying if this wouldn't go into, you wouldn't have to do this until your next review cycle of your curriculum. And so although school districts may keep the same curriculum, they are required to look it over and to figure out if there have been any changes on a state level that they have to upgrade it. As it relates to your concerns about March and May.
Can you point that out to us?
Mr. Chair, is this the updated? This isn't the updated one that came out of finance
and growth.
Well, it better be the updated one that came up out of finance, or we're in trouble again.
2.4. Thank you.
Thank you. Line 2.4. Okay. Okay, Representative Holbrook, see the 2.4. Okay, Representative Walker.
I agree with that. That doesn't address what my concerns is. I want on a year-to-year basis before a student is involved in this curriculum, the parents have a guaranteed right to review it and a right to, I mean, I always prefer opt-in.
Sure.
There's always discussion around that, but at the very least, a formal opt-out process.
Mr. Chair, I know you don't like dealing with policy. Mm-hmm. Representative Bryling checked with others that have been assisting me with this bill. There is an oral amendment that I can do, or I can do it on the House floor to deal with Representative Pope.
I think maybe on the House floor would be the best spot to have that clarified. Okay?
Mr. Chair, I just think members have to read the whole sentence because it's pretty clear that B and E are very different and they're sort of regulating different pieces of this. I mean, they aren't in conflict with each other because one is about access to the materials, the other is the review by an adult student, parent, guardian, adult, student, to review the content. And I don't think they're in conflict with them, Holbert. I think we shouldn't be discussing it in here, but I think if you had a full discussion of those two sections, D and E, they at a quick read appear in conflict, but when you read them carefully, I think they are not in conflict with each other. They work together to provide both the school district and the parents or guardians or adult students certain rights about this. I think you missed, when you stated it on the record, you said that reasonably in D, I think you didn't say restricting, you said a different word. And so I just want to point that out, that I don't think these are in conflict, but I'd be happy to talk to you about it.
Okay. Other discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Representative Miner.
Thank you, Chair Solberg. Representative Walker, I'm wondering if you worked at all with the Minnesota School Board Association regarding the language that Representative Holberg is referring to, because I'm mentioning it because most districts do have policies about curriculum review and opt-out procedures. In fact, all school districts may have, but I think MSBA would be able to quickly identify language if we need additional language that would work with existing school policy. So,
just for information, this was discussed in the Finance Committee, and MSBA did testify at that particular committee on this very issue. So.
Representative Solberg.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, and Representative Bryant. The language actually came from Representative McFarland.
One point, I mean, I think this is a yearly exercise and that the curriculum would be year by year building on more and more age, quote-unquote, age-appropriate information.
Okay.
So I don't think this is a one-time event for a parent and a kid in school, but rather a yearly exercise.
Representative Silberg, I know you want to move on. Thank you. Representative Hobart, that's not true. The development would take at whatever that cycle of your school review would be, and then it would be for all up under review cycles of just like any other curriculum that you're looking at, whether in science or math. You would not be upgrading it every year, even though there's new information. We're not expecting
schools
to do that.
I don't think
that's... No,
Representative Hobart.
Mr. Chair and Representative Walker, my point wasn't with the curriculum changing each year, but rather a parent may be fine with the 7th and 8th grade curriculum, but as it gets more involved, that 9th grade may say, oh, I'm opting out at this point, you know, because I'm assuming they're not teaching the same components for 6 years, but rather the instructional materials change each year.
The other discussion on the bill. If not, then the chair would renew motion that House file number 615 be recommended to pass and placed on the general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Knuth? Is she here? Okay. The chair would move the House file 3195 would be recommended to pass and placed on the general registry. And members, there is a official note in your packet.
Is this an updated one?
And it is updated. Zero cost to it right now. Representative Knuth, welcome, and just give a brief explanation of your bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House File 3195 outlines some issues around the possibility of a cap-and-trade program and brought forth this year because Governor Parenti has signed an agreement with the Midwest Governors Association, five other states, and the Premier of Manitoba to negotiate on several, the Midwestern Greenhouse Gas Accord, negotiating on several energy and climate issues, including the negotiation of a model rule for a Midwest cap-and-trade program, with that model rule coming back on November 15th of this year and enacting hopefully within 18 months of that date. And in response, as elected leaders in this state, I think we have a major role to play in such a big policy issue, a cap-and-trade program basically being a way to limit and lower carbon emissions. You put a cap on the number of emissions in your economy and which sectors are included as part of the debate, and then trade within that cap and progressively lower the cap over time. So what my bill does is say that we want to be a part of this cap and trade program and then outlines a couple studies. Well, actually, it says we want to be part of this cap-and-trade program, and then it in Section 3, asks the Commissioner of Commerce to report back about the progress of the Midwestern Greenhouse Gas Accord negotiations to the chairs of the relevant committees. Several legislators from the House and Senate would be appointed to receive reports and to offer advice to the... there's four people from Minnesota who are appointed to this group and to be in communication with them about the progress of the negotiation of this model rule. States that anything negotiated is not effective until enacted by the legislature. And then the meat of the bill is two studies. One would be a governance study about any revenue that might come in from a cap and trade program. One of the major policy issues or in designing a cap-and-trade program is how you initially allocate the allowances or permits, whether you auction them or allocate them freely, that'll be a major part of the negotiations, and if they are auctioned, as I hope they are, because I think that's the most effective cap-and-trade program, there's some questions about how to govern that source of revenue and use it effectively to transition into a lower carbon economy. And then there's an economic and emissions study that basically looks at some of the costs to industry, how effectively we can reduce emissions, the benefits in terms of health, in terms of transitioning into a new energy economy, and give some criteria about equity issues and reducing consumer impacts and things along those lines. You can read through that. And then there's an appropriation from the from a previous appropriation, shifting it slightly from the future, and this appropriation is carried in the House File 1812.
Discussion. Discussion on the bill. Representative Chumper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Knuth, I'm a little concerned about the timeline, like on the governance study. Is there going to be enough time to do that and have it done by January 1st?
Representative Knuth, are you on page 2, line 13, is that correct?
That's right, Mr. Chairman.
Line 10 to line 23.
Right.
Representative Knuth?
We're still, Mr. Chair, Representative Semper, we're still in negotiations trying to figure out exactly the timeline, but basically as this moves forward, having that information is key to getting this done right, and this is so important. I mean, part of the reasons I'm pushing these studies this year is we need to get this done right. And one of the major parts is we all know in times of budget difficulties where we look for money and fights over where we look for money. And I really strongly believe that for the public to buy into a cap and trade program, they have to see that the money being put into that program is used to transition to a lower cost or the transition to a lower carbon economy. And so I think that's some really key information in terms of what we need to be making decisions in next year's legislature. And I'd be willing to move it to January 15th or February 1st.
Not here.
Not here. On the floor.
Okay. Other discussion on the bill? Again, that's here because of the change in the appropriation, different use of an existing appropriation. If not, all those in favor signify, I'm sorry, the chair will renew his motion at House File 3195. We recommend the pass, placed in the general registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The next bill on the agenda is Representative Hilty, 3337. Senate file. Representative Hilty, you want to make a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would. I would move that Senate file 3337 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Representative Hilty moves Senate file 3337 placed on general register. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I think the reason that Senate File 3337 is before you is that it is the energy omnibus policy bill. It contains, it includes two bills that I think you've already heard this morning. That would be the Eakin bill on the Petrofund cleanup and the Junkie bill on wind aggregation. I think those are the only elements of this bill that have any fiscal implications, and hopefully you've already resolved any issues.
Members, involved with I think we have a sheet. It's not a formal personal, but it's this one of the little boxes. Everyone has that. That's a summary of the first one is the Eakin bill that we talked about already, and the wind conversion is the Junkie bill that we've passed already, and they're included in this bill as well. So that's the fiscal implications of this particular bill. Any other questions at all on this particular bill? Any other questions? If not, then Representative Schulte renews his motion.
I do, Mr. Chair. I would renew the motion that House Senate File 3337 be recommended, passed, and placed on the general register.
And that's the first unofficial engrossment as well.
Correct, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor then signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And carried. That completes the agenda. Announcement Monday, 10 o'clock in the morning. We'll be meeting Ways and Means, and we'll try to get the agenda out as soon as we get it confirmed. Working on the agenda. Any other announcements? If not, the meeting is adjourned.